and welcome to the final chapter of User-Generated Content for Design. My name is Alexandre Joyce, and I'm studying at the University of Montreal in the Design and Complexity Master's Program. Chapter 5, Conclusions to Consequences. This research has studied user-generated content over the internet when researching for design. In the previous chapter, we compared and contrasted the results of our fieldwork with user content. In short, we demonstrated that designers have much to benefit from user-generated content because users submit elements pertaining to all steps of the design process and reveal all elements of the relationships present in the design situation. These findings have initiated a final line of questioning that addresses the role of a designer in light of the user's creative online participation. Two main questions will be discussed in this chapter. The first question concerns the tool that has become the internet. As discussed in the first chapter, the internet is supporting a larger amount of participation, which is affecting fields that touch media and culture. So we ask, is the internet democratizing the design process? Secondly, in this research, we witnessed firsthand how users have put forth their creativity. They have been resourceful to such an extent that we wonder how their creativity impacts the design profession. In other words, can users be designers? To answer these questions, we propose to circle back to this research foundation in complex design and participatory design, as well as in our field study conclusions. This will lead us to a final thought on how the relationship between users and designers can change our perception of the design activity. Is the internet democratizing the design process? For this debate, we define democratization as the process of making something accessible to everyone. It involves the transition from an authoritarian system to a system ruled by its users. The internet has been a democratization tool because it has given its users the power to create content and interact with other users freely. We wonder what consequences can come from this shift of power to the users. Before entering this debate in terms of design, we will reconsider how the internet has influenced other domains such as media and culture. As an author studying how the internet affects culture, Keane is alarmed by the downside of the internet democratization. He demonstrates with how amateur journalism can trivialize and corrupt serious debate. In this case, the ideals of internet democratization are undermining truth, sourcing civic discourses, and belittling expertise, experience, and talents. He characterizes user-generated content as an outburst of mass exhibitionism. In his view, user-generated content has replaced deep analysis with superficial observations of the world around us. We are accepting shrill opinion rather than considered judgment. One of the consequences of the rise of internet participation is less culture, less reliable news, and a chaos of useless information. On the other hand, he states that the real value of citizen journalism is the ability to address niche markets otherwise ignored by mainstream media. In the end, the value of mainstream media is that it provides a common frame of reference, a common conversation, and common values. Then again, that monopoly is also at the root of its demise. What is wrong with wanting to democratize systems? Isn't the ideal of democracy that everyone can voice their opinions? Keane argues that radical democratic culture is hardly conducive to scholarship or creation of wisdom. However, the society in which we live today requires highly specialized professionals. These professionals receive years of education, and nothing short of excellence will prevail. This specialization has come from the ever-growing depth of knowledge and consequent division of labor. Yet, by empowering the amateur, we are undermining the authority of the very experts who contribute to creating reliable information and sources of culture. In these cases, the internet is democratizing to such an extent that it is menacing these fields. With these examples in mind, we now wonder how the design field can be influenced by the democratizing effect of the internet. In 2006, Bonziepe shared a broader perspective on the relationship between democracy and design. The first dimension that was touched was ethics within the multiple practices of design. The modernist past is evoked because of the way rational problem solving created an ephemeral spike of interest for design product that paid no attention to the ensuing relationships that were experienced by the user. The concept of democracy that Bonziepe favors reduces the domination of external forces, like authoritarian designers. The democratic ideal is a quest for autonomy of thoughts, of actions, and of dreams. This means that both designers and users need to be revolutionary when fighting against authoritarian systems. In Bonziepe's perspective, the concept of democratic design was freedom in action and reflection to formulate and carry out an ideal. His view on democratic design can be summed up as autonomy of projecting. Many researchers and practitioners advocate participatory practices because it breeds the values of democracy into civic, educational, and work settings. It had been proven by the works of Pateman that one of the benefits of participatory democracy is the acceptance of the ensuing decisions. This democratic value can be seen in strengthening of disempowered groups, in the improvement of internal processes, and in the combination of diverse knowledge to make better services and products. Subsequent work supplemented the founding democratic motivation with a need for combining a complex knowledge for realistic design problems. Recently, Beck started a new discussion arguing for the necessity to recapture participative design's political dimensions. In Scandinavia, the ideal of democratic design was developed for practical reasons and for the use of technology at work. Historically, trade unions were seen as vehicles for industrial democracy. In the context of democratization at work, a participatory approach to the design process alone was not sufficient. In such a context, the definition of democracy was simply freedom. This goes one step further than what Bonziepe proposes. Yet this early vision of democratic design is less pertinent as it has no boundaries and isn't oriented towards attaining an ideal. Nonetheless, Scandinavian democratic participation brings an interesting element to this discussion because it sees the people as the means of the process as well as the ends. Therefore, in participative design, democracy involves more than the formal right to vote. This particular understanding of democracy, in the sense of promoting an active participation, relates to the internet allowing emancipative proposals to answer needs of social groups. Not to mention that all the information and the activities taking place on websites are easily documented, timestamps, classed, and memorized. This creates an asynchronous and democratic approach to project development, therefore allowing more people into the conversation. Naturally, this form of user self-publishing comes with its sets of disadvantages. Let it be said that the internet doesn't automatically implicate democracy. The negative sides of the internet create a form of meocracy. Many people don't have access to the internet, and many don't have sufficient knowledge of computers to actively participate in the process. Nonetheless, the internet has proven that it can be a catalyst for initiating change. Basically, the internet is leveling hierarchy with its network. No other place could allow for users to integrate the design process with the same amount of participation. In the case of too many end users for everyone to participate directly, representative democracy is another avenue for implementing participative design. However, so many users have embraced the internet, quantity is no longer the problem, yet quality of participation is to be evaluated. Bonziepe brings up the advent of technology, which modifies the design questions to symbolic inquiries that can be more in touch with the users. For example, instead of a designer asking users to redesign a bus, one could ask users to describe their experience of getting to work. And in such cases, Bonziepe describes the role of the designer as making these invisible functions visible. If we project this understanding to the internet, the designer's role could be to make the invisible function of the internet as a democratic design tool visible. In other words, this research has shown that the internet has become a means for users to express themselves, and now we hope to help designers encounter, engage, and encourage this creative content. To conclude, within the context of democratizing the design process, the internet has given users a space to express themselves and tools to engage in changing situations. If we stay close to this meaning of design democracy as described as the autonomy of projecting, we could state without a doubt that users are taking advantage of the internet's openness and structure to develop their own projects. The same way Sanders has been creating tools and exercises for users to speak up, the internet has been embraced as a means of creative expression. Sanders states that the task of getting users to create starts with designers waking the creativity within users. In addition, Sanders believes that people want to express themselves and participate directly and proactively in the design development process. And I quote Sanders, "The new rules are the rules of networks, not hierarchies. People are cynical about the methods and goals of consumerism. The users of products, interfaces, systems, and spaces are realizing that through networking, they have an enormous amount of collective influence. They're beginning to use their influence to get what they want, when they want it, and how they want it." This brings us to a change in the designer's role, which she views as facilitating the expression of users' needs and dreams. This new role has the practice of designers and social researchers not just coming together, but completely fading into one another. This new breed of design researcher will create the tools to let users express his creativity, then analyze and interpret user-generated artifacts and models, and this process will lead to inspiring innovation. In professional participative design, the role of the designer changes because of the user takes on some of the creative aspects in the process. Similarly, in our studies, we have witnessed firsthand the vast quantity of creative content submitted by the users on the internet. This has led us to ask if users can become designers. Can users be designers? The initial response to this question is another question. What is design? We have touched on this when citing Simon's definition of changing existing situations into preferred ones. With such a wide and open definition, anyone who devises plans of action for the future could be considered a designer. Our research wishes to challenge this line of thinking. Although it isn't the definition of design that is at stake here, we do want to make a point concerning the profession of practicing design. From the results of our research, one element that distinguishes the work of designers from the content provided by users is scalability. Users weren't looking to solve problems experienced by a multitude of other users, while designers worked to satisfy the needs of many. This is in accordance with the definition of design provided by the International Council of Societies of Industrial Design, the ICSID, written in 1995, where, and I quote, "Design is a creative activity that consists in determining the formal properties of objects that are produced industrially." The strength of this definition lies in the fact that it implies a specific technical capacity. Since most users aren't demonstrating technical capacities in the content they generate, they aren't thinking in terms of large production. In point of fact, the strength of user-generated content is exactly the opposite. It focuses on the user's point of view, and thus void of technical limitations. Today, in 2008, ICSID has readjusted its definition of design. And I quote again, "Design is a creative activity whose aim is to establish the multifaceted qualities of objects, processes, services, and their systems in whole life cycles." This brings into play another element that differentiates the work of a designer from that of a user-generated content. It is the holistic point of view on the project and the whole design situation. The designer is aware of the bigger picture, including the life cycle, when proposing a solution, whereas users are more concerned with one of the three spaces of the design process or one of the relationships that is part of the design project. As a researcher on user participation, Buxton states very clearly that we are not all designers. He opposes the idea that anyone who chooses the color of a room and the layout of furniture in their living room can be considered a designer. To better understand this problem of terminology, he proposes to look at the difference between a mathematician and someone doing arithmetic. Anyone can add up the products bought at the grocery, but that doesn't make them a mathematician. Medicine is another field that can be used to illustrate the difference between users and designers. Within medicine, there are different levels of practice. Nurses, paramedics, and physicians all care for patients. Even patients care for themselves. But there are skills and aptitudes to be developed in order to earn the title of professional and subsequently practice as a medical doctor. The same concept of developing skills and aptitudes can be applied to understanding the nuances in the practice of design. From our field research, very rarely have users demonstrated content of similar quality to that of designers. Then again, in this study, we weren't asking users to be creative. We simply studied the content readily available. In that respect, we wish to strongly underline that users can be particularly creative. In fact, This research wishes to continue with previous efforts studying user-generated creative content and continue demonstrating how users can be just as creative as designers. On the other hand, there are some rare individuals who are blurring the line between user and designer. These lead users have decided to solve their own problems and have made it possible for other users to take advantage of their creativity. For example, we found some blogs that were held by entrepreneurs who take design decisions when starting their own companies or when creating custom products. Relating to the phenomenon of professional amateurs, these exceptional users are stepping into the design process. Although in such cases, the pro-am's skill set is specific and his knowledge is focused. In this case, the user demonstrates an understanding of the level of professional designers within their particular passion, but that still does not make them general practitioners of design. That's why the line between designers and users is not often blurred, as the work of a designer is a skill that can be taught, learned, and put into practice, no matter what the problem situation is. What continues to distinguish designers from users is the main skill that has forever been in the designer's toolbox, the ability to draw. Jones sees this as the common action of designers of all kinds. Buxton agrees and adds that design is accompanied with a form of drawing called sketching. According to Buxton, sketching is a good indication of the presence of the activity of design, to which we must nuance that that doesn't assure that the person sketching is a designer. This idea of sketching brings a lot of perspective when looking back on the videos, images, and blog entries of our field of research. Only a small amount of user-generated content contained a distinctive form of sketching and drawings. However, we did collect some creative scenario sketching, either with actors playing out a design situation or in a use scenario of a creative project. For users to sketch in the form of scenarios ties back to Carroll's communication languages between designers and users in participatory design. Carroll submits a few possibilities for common ground in participatory design. First is scenario building. This is where the user is the director of the scene and he is forced to reflect on how he is going to suffice his needs. And Carroll sees even more in this approach. And I quote, "Because all stakeholders are able to create stories of envisioned user experiences, scenario-based design allows non-designers to participate as creators as well as critics." The second possible means of common communication is prototypes, as they provide, and I quote, "an evolving framework for exploring design options and gradually focusing on a final solution." Prototypes, or the proper term maquettes, also represent a physical incarnation or even explanation of ideas. The last common ground for communication amongst participants is organizational representation. Take, for example, mind mapping software. To ensure that all parties understand the relationships between the different elements, a visual representation is required. This creates a level understanding field which helps the participants conceptualize the situation at hand. Therefore, organizational representation presents a common point of view on the problem. This common language in scenarios, prototypes, and organizational models seem less adapted to product design and seem to cater more naturally to services design. That's why we believe that further studies should investigate if participatory design leads to designing better services more than designing better products. In point of fact, a study on user involvement in a service innovation revealed that users produced more original ideas than the company's professional service developers. Understanding design as a communicative process is also uncovered by the works of Sean. He treats design primarily as a relationship between the designers and the design material. In doing so, Sean emphasizes that design competence is foremost the ability to orchestrate the mutual learning processes from the relationship between the design practitioners and the design material. But presently, we are moving into another generation of design research methods where actors are becoming the central focus of the design process, not material objects. The communicative and dialogical aspect of designing remains, but instead of designers having to conversation with materials, they're beginning to have conversations with the users. How is research for design like a conversation looking to create understanding? Distinct from Simon's perception of design as working towards preferred situations, Coyne and Snodgrass bring a new way to perceive the design activity. They have studied the works of philosophers in understanding language, and from this framework they have established that design is a conversation with the situation. This perspective neatly ties into the Schon's concept of reflection and action, and allows for the concept of surprise. Simon's preferred situations gives the impression that surprises aren't possible. However, in the spirit of Coyne and Snodgrass, logic comes after hermeneutics. Living before thinking. So it would be surprises that lead to preferred situations. This is yet another push driving the design process away from the positivist model into a constructivist approach. It also circles back to the foundation of a complex approach to design with which we started this research thesis. Coyne and Snodgrass unite to explore a metaphor from the works of prominent writers on language to describe the design process. They begin by reviewing Wittgenstein's description of language as atomistic elements that, when assembled within the laws of grammar, form sentences. This relates to the positivist method that was projected onto design during the modernist era. But then, how come we understand the words in the middle of a sentence? The answer to that question came from another German philosopher, Gadamer, who developed the concept of a conversation. The meaning of the words is made possible at all times because of the context of the conversation. We move from the words to the context and back, gathering the information along the way. This movement, comparing the parts to the whole, is key in creating an understanding. And in some cases, it even leads to anticipation or creation. This same back-and-forth movement has been felt in our research when going from studying the user's content to the designer's brainstorming. In the initial states of the conversation, we project meaning to the whole. During the development, we are constantly referring, refining, and redefining our understanding depending on how the anticipation rings true with the present information. The same can be said for design. It starts with an interpretation of the situation. The further the project is developed, the more questions are answered and the more information is collected. Meanwhile, the designer can adjust the initial projection. In the end, the creativity emerges from the back-and-forth movement, leading to a better understanding of the relationship between the whole and the parts. Again, this highly resonates with the complex approach, which is more interested in understanding the relationships amongst the parts than deepening the knowledge of the parts themselves. When describing design as a conversation, many thoughts have come from Gadamer's work on hermeneutics. For example, one doesn't start a conversation, one falls into it. A conversation is of a participative nature. It involves all present. And I quote, "Thus is the characteristic of every true conversation, that each opens himself to the other person, truly accepts his point of view as worthy of consideration, and gets inside the other, to such an extent that he understands not a particular individual, but what he says." Because of our innate hermeneutical approach to experiences, interpretation is our method of engagement into the contextual world we live in. In a complex design approach, prejudices and values surface in the designer's interpretations, thereby creating a consciousness of his point of view when in a conversation with the situation and the actors. Based on Gadamer's work on dialogues in conversation, the authors demonstrate how the design activity is less similar to a positivist and logical understanding of language and more apparent to a contextual and dialogical understanding of a conversation. We concur with this shift from a conversation with the design materials to a conversation with the actors or users within a design situation. The research for design phase begins with framing the problem in a way a conversation begins with a question. Problems don't exist on their own. Someone needs to define, frame, or conceive the situation as a problem. Ultimately, problems are summed up in the form of a question. Answering a question is a method to create a to-and-fro movement, leading to understanding the problem. The initial question begins the conversation with the actors in the situation. The answer begs the designer for more questions. This defines the reflective designer. Not only is design a conversation with the situation, it's also a conversation starter amongst the actors of the situation. In our research, we have seen how this conversation isn't about this designer's will, but about the user's point of view on the situation. This is what has led us to investigate the democratic aspect of the internet. In the end, Being open to further questioning is essential to continue the design conversation with the actors of the situation. Design is not just a creation of a solution. It is about hosting a conversation towards change. Our research has shown how the internet has proven to be a place to host this conversation. Participating users are engaging in the beginning of a conversation to share their needs and dreams. Designers can respond by aggregating and bringing nuances to the participants' discourses. Both users and designers working together towards making a preferred situation emerge. Maybe the designer's role is not only to aggregate, but beforehand to make all views understandable. By taking on the user's arguments and connecting in a true dialogue, design becomes a formulation or an explanation of what is to be understood. This type of emergence in the design process requires the designer's interpretative skills and global perspective on the situation, all of which is integrated in a constructivist complex design approach to invite all parties to interact and to create meaning. In conclusion, this research argues for designers to take part in a complex design approach in order to include more points of view, to allow for debate, and accept that there is no absolute truth when creating an ever-evolving solution to a design problem. What are our final conclusions? In this final chapter, we've reflected upon three inherent themes to this master's research. Firstly, we reinstated that the internet has proven to be leveling hierarchies and making a way for people to participate in many fields. This has left us questioning if the internet's democratization effect was reaching into the design process. No matter how small the presence of a utopian ingredient reminiscent of the Scandinavian initiatives, the internet has allowed for a form of democratization of the design process. Our research has shown that users now have a space and tools to autonomously project their needs and desires. Secondly, we wondered if the amounts of creativity and problem-solving aptitudes present in user-generated content could lead to users playing the roles of designers. The answer to this question was that very rarely users can take on the role of a designer. Even in such cases, lead users aren't professional designers. They lack the education and skills as well as the broader picture of the design process. Yet by demonstrating their point of view, users are generating content that is highly relevant to the design process. Participatory practices have led the design field in this direction by including users in the early stages of the design process. The relationship between the designers and users demands for means of communication and a common language. Of the three means of communications between users and designers we presented, scenarios were the most readily available form of communication. Some prototypes were exposed, but no organizational models were presented. More importantly, this study has revealed that the internet supports this idea of a common ground in terms of a communicative language between users and designers. The third question rose from the communication aspect of professional participatory design. We asked if, when researching for design, designers could create understanding through conversation. In fact, this way of seeing design as a conversation between users and designers has impacted our point of view on the design activity itself. This doesn't affect the process of design described by Jones as a cyclical forward movement within the problem, creative, and solution spaces. Rather, the thought that design was a conversation with the materials of the situation has changed to a conversation with the actors of the situation. This change in the focus of the design activity continues with the idea that we are moving into another generation of design research methods where design meets complexity. And now for the general conclusion. Whether it's the way we gather knowledge or the way we create culture, the internet is changing many relationships in the world we live in. It is even changing the way we participate in projects. Essentially, this research studied how the internet and user-generated content can affect design. Complexity provided a structure for this research as well as an approach to studying the internet as a system that supports relationships between subjects, objects, environments, and projects. The characteristics of the internet have been described in the light of complex systems, demonstrating that the internet is dialogical, recursive, and hologrammatical. Furthermore, the open structure of the internet has revealed to be a conductor of innovative practices. In writing blogs, sharing knowledge in a wiki, reviewing services, uploading videos, user-generated content shared over the internet has been a contributing factor in aiding the social revolution of the internet, known as Web 2.0. This democratic space allows for one to express his views that are proper to his context. The open structure of the internet made way for the professional amateur movement, where users have begun to take over the net for their own purposes. Crowdsourcing is a prominent example of how this participation can become a means to a planned end. It has been used in this research as a method for harnessing user-generated content. From this day forward, we propose for designers to research and take advantage of this content. Our efforts have been focused on understanding user-generated content in order to better integrate it into the early stages of the design process. We asked two questions. What type of information does user-generated content provide for design research? Is this information more pertinent to product design, service design, or product service systems design? Our first step in answering these questions was to expose the key elements in the design process, design relationships, and design outputs. We have seen that the design process is constituted of three connecting spaces, namely the problem, creative, and solution spaces. In terms of researching for design, the relationships that are present in the design situations are between users, objects, and contexts. These three dimensions reveal needs and opportunities to be taken into account in the design process. Additionally, the importance of understanding users' needs and their point of view are reoccurring in the founding theories that support product design, service design, and PSS design. Exposing the founding theory on the design process, design relationships, and design outputs was beneficial in distinguishing the variables in this research. We thoroughly described these variables to propose a methodology for studying user-generated content. Inspired by democratic ideals, participatory design proposes methods to give a voice to the user in the design process. After reviewing how other fields have embraced participatory design principles, we then focused on the advantages of professional participatory design when creating the methodology for this study. Following in the path set with the works of Sanders, this study should be considered as another example of a means for designers to perceive tacit needs by allowing for users to express their ideas. As the users create freely intuitively, expressing their inner latent desires, the designers can have a third-person point of view on the results. This research has revealed many great implications and trends in the way users naturally communicate within the design process. We hope to have provided some insight into how designers can take advantage of all types of user-generated content. Here are some of our findings. It is through the eyes of the designer that the user-generated content can leap into the design process. For example, some content pertaining to the problem space demonstrated users that were conscious and explicit of the problem, while others were unknowingly expressing a problem, thus requiring the designer's point of view. Based on the quantitative aspect of the results, we noticed that more than half of the content submitted about products is pertinent to the problem space. Regarding the media choice, users have been more inclined to present elements of the problem space in their blog writings. The content related to the solution space showed existing products and services where images seem to better convey the fixed aspect of solutions to design situations. Starting from how these solutions answer the user's needs, we propose to use a concept-shifting strategy for designers to enter their own creative space. While remaining in a form of reflective practice, we propose brainstorming as a parallel activity to researching for design. Lastly, we studied creative content. Some users demonstrate astounding creativity, but to no ulterior purpose, whereas others seemed to design by materializing their point of view on a problematic situation and then initiating change. What's more, one out of every four submissions was relevant to creative space. From a media standpoint, users provided elements in the creative space twice as often when submitting videos and images. Still concerning the design process variable, we revealed that all types of relationships can be found in the content present online. In terms of user-object-context relationships in the design situation, we were able to discover that rarely have users provided content about their products without including themselves in the process. Also, the relationships implicating the object are more present in the services and PSS than in products. In these cases, the user turns his attention to that which he can physically interact with and take a certain form of ownership. In a PSS, users are more active in the use phase, which, we argue, led to the highest amount of users' experience content. Last but not least, we observed the divergence between services where the focus is on the experience itself and products where the focus is mostly on the individual user. In the final chapter, we reflected upon the consequences of our research on the field of design. Because the internet has proven to be leveling hierarchies and making way for people to participate in many fields, we question the democratization aspect of the internet on the design process. By wanting to participate actively, users could influence the design process by exposing their needs, solution, and ideas. Although these users might not have participated directly in the design process, the internet has allowed for users' autonomy of projecting. In addition, we wondered if users were taking on the role of designers. We concluded that users aren't professional designers because they lack the education, skills, and broader picture of the design process. Nonetheless, users have shown their interest and relevance to their participation in the design process. This summoned a need for a common language between users and designers. We then presented the three means of communications between users and designers: scenarios, prototypes, and organizational models. In the end, this study has revealed that the internet supports communication between users and designers. The last thought concerned creating understanding through conversation. In fact, describing design as a conversation between users and designers has impacted our point of view on the design activity itself. Before, design was a conversation with materials. Currently, design is becoming more of a conversation with the actors of the situation and the situation itself. Amongst other currents, the evolution of society is regulated by the design field. Today, design's problems are growing in number and in size, thus calling for a complex approach. To tame such problems requires a form of collaboration amongst the actors of the situation, including designers. Designers are joining users when no longer asking the question how things can be done, but why should they be done? Participation is just one of the ways that designers can interact with society to map out the intentions of design. For the sum of everyone's knowledge will lead the way towards proposing a creative solution. The ensuing challenge is in allowing for the participating actors to change their world. This implies a change in the nature of designing. When stakeholders participate in the design process, the role of the designer is that of a facilitator of collaboration. The responsibility of the outcome doesn't fall squarely on the shoulders of the designer, as his focus is on assuring the process is right. Consequently, the design profession is moving from proposing solutions for people's problems to enabling problem owners to generate their own solutions. This change in the focus of the design activity continues with the idea that we are moving into another generation of design research methods where design meets complexity. Complex design hopes to promote a proactive and reflexive attitude. As designers, we're not trying to create new products and services from new knowledge. We're looking to create more meaning from new experiences. Encounter, engage, and encourage. That concludes my master's thesis entitled User-Generated Content for Design. My name is Alexandre Joyce, and I'm wishing you all the best.